This is episode number 760 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about some upcoming shows, Bryan Singer coming back to direct an X-Men TV show, and the passing of Jon Wetton. Our comics this week will be Captain America Steve Rogers number 10, Ophelia's Revenge, and Archie number 16. And the BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza comes back this week with a lot of BoobTube, Riverdale, The Flash, Arrow, and more.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well, except I have been sick.
Very sick for the past couple weeks.
That flu thing came back like a boomerang and clocked me, and I was bedridden for a couple days.
Yeah.
Which was great because I got a ton of reading done.
Your voice was going in and out.
Yep. But the bad part was I was feeling like I was dead. It was awful. I couldn't breathe, couldn't sleep. Blah, 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 but on the mend.
I love your t-shirt today. I'm mesmerized by it. It's a McDonald's t-shirt that says, "You're more special than our sauce."
Yes, my wife told me never to wear that one in public.
I like it. I like it. It makes me feel good because every time I look at it, it's like you're giving me an affirmation.
Yes.
Which is really nice.
We have a friend who works at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And for some strange reason, just found out that I loved McDonald's. So he gave us a ton of t-shirts.
So this must have just been the first time he ever met you then to know that you love McDonald's.
10 years we've known this guy.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
It's like we've had to battle through a legion of Vikings to record this show over the past few weeks between the sickness, between schedule stuff. Like it is just crazy right now.
Yep.
Like it was like two long lost friends today when I got to your house to record the show. We're like, oh my God, I'm so happy to see you. Like we haven't seen each other in years. Like this is the first time that we've had a chance to get together and a lot has happened. We will start the show, obviously, by talking about some very unfortunate and pretty big news that hit this week, which, of course, was the passing of Jon Wetton.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I don't know if we even spoke last week, but I was talking to my family about I said, you know, I think I need to reach out to Jon because I just was not getting a good feeling.
Uh-huh.
He recently got married, which was great. His wife is fantastic. We met her last year. Real sweetheart. The picture that was posted almost looked like, hey, I'm not going to make it. So I want to get married.
Sure.
And it was touching to see, but it was really sad. Talking to my daughter Becky about it because her and Jon were really close.
Sure.
Kind of. You know, talking about this, I was at work Tuesday and went on Blabbermouth, and literally the first story was the passing of Jon.
And that's where you learned
about
it?
That's where I learned it.
Oh, that is brutal.
And
because you're like me, you check that site every day just for general like music news, because we're obviously anybody who listens to the show knows that we are diehard music hounds. You used to work in radio. Like we every day, like people check the world news, we check music news every day.
Yeah.
So to find out in that way is brutal. And if anybody's wondering, like, what, you know, if you don't know who Jon Wetton is, King Crimson, Asia.
Yep.
If you haven't listened to the show way back in the day, then you may not know that Matt had a very close relationship with Jon. And I was fortunate enough to meet Jon through you many years ago at United FanCon.
Yeah.
And you've had an ongoing relationship with him. A lot of it centered around your being a very good friend to him during his struggle with sobriety.
Yeah, that was we got to know each other through that. It was 2002 we met. And that's where it kind of like all my emotions about it have gone right back to that. Thinking about when we met, and I remember looking at my wife in 2002 going, you know what, this dude's going to die. He's not going to make it. He's going to drink himself to death. Over the next year or two, we spoke almost every day for at least a couple of years. There were times where I would get off the phone mad at him. We'd be talking. I'd yell at him, telling him, are you stupid?
Right.
I can't believe how you've got all the talent in the world and you're wasting it. And all of a sudden, life and things clicked for him. He got himself right back to where he wanted to be, right where he should be, was able to regain a lot of the respect that he lost. When Asia reformed in 2005 with the original lineup, that was a huge thing for him emotionally. He was able to go back and fix a lot of bridges, with the band UK, with Eddie Jobson, who he had a long, just bitter break with. And the two of them were able to rekindle, get back together, do a tour. It seemed like he spent a lot of the last year or two just kind of rebuilding relationships that had been destroyed through that dark time in his life.
And they put out new music like that. Yep. It kind of all came full circle.
Yep.
Which in that way, it's that, not that that's a silver lining to the situation, but as you mentioned, the repairing of relationships, yep, the bringing the band back together, the making of new music, like things that you look back and you're happy that he had a chance to do those, yeah, things. And for that to become part of his legacy now is that, look, they were still making music. Yep. They were still doing this stuff together. And as you said, everything kind of clicked. And so that is something you have to be thankful for.
Yeah, I'm excited and so happy that he was able to have another 15 years. He almost died from a heart attack, I think in 2005, 2006, had, mm-hmm, triple bypass. So he's had a couple close calls, but it's been a really tough thing. I mean, my thoughts have been going mostly to just that time in his life when it was bad and,
sure,
when it was dark, and seeing all the great things that have happened. And to be honest, I tried, like, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to listen to some Asia tonight. I'm going to listen to some UK and some of this. I couldn't right, bring myself to do it. I heard the voice and I had to turn it off. It's still, this is one, I mean, it's one thing to talk about a musician that we've loved,
sure,
from afar and things like that, but it's tougher when I worship this guy's music. I loved everything about him. And to get to know him kind of adds a weirder element to it.
Right.
And that whole thing. And Michael Sweet, a couple days ago, or I think right after he found out, posted a thing on Twitter about the passing of John and what an amazing musician he was. So a lot of the world is really touched by this. And it's Jeff Downes, the keyboard player for Asia, was the one who kind of broke the news to the world. And he's had to do way too much of that lately. I'm my heart breaks for him, because not only him, Greg Lake, you know, Keith Emerson, his daughter. It's just been a tough, tough, tough time.
We talk about that all the time, is that we're in that age now where it just seems like this happens too often.
Yep.
And and I'm sure that it won't be the last, but obviously a very emotional one. And
yeah,
so maybe when there's a little bit of time that has passed, I think for people who are listening to the show and maybe you weren't big Asia fans or you weren't a King Crimson fan or whatever, the great thing about Asia, and I was not a humongous Asia fan, and I knew very little about King Crimson in terms of my musical history. And so, but what was great about the work that John Wetton did is that there is something for everybody in there.
Yeah.
And I think maybe at some point we could do like a playlist on the Secret Identity website just of like, hey, if you weren't familiar with the band or you wanted to check out his work and you wanted to see some of the stuff that he's done, here are some places for you to start.
Yeah. That's because a great idea.
Unfortunately, for some people, they don't get into an artist's work until they pass and,
yep,
they hear about them that way. But that's the great thing about the music that they make, is it's there forever.
Yeah.
And so there's never a bad time to get into somebody's music and to see what it was that they created and the legacy that they left. And so there is so much good stuff to dig into with John Wetton's work that that I think that would be cool.
And the pride of John's life, one of his musical prides was the fact that Kurt Cobain once said that King Crimson's Red album was the greatest album ever recorded of all time and his favorite album.
There you go.
So that was a nice feather for John.
Right. And that's like that, you know, 6 degrees of separation thing where there's Nirvana fans out there who are like, oh, I never knew that.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to go check this out now.
Yeah.
If it was something that was that influential to a person that I, you know, love the music of, then I need to go check that out.
And you have Red, right? Didn't you get?
I believe so. Yeah.
I think you got Red, the first Asia album. Because you got three of them, I remember.
Yes.
And I think it might have been John's,
the other one was
the solo album at the time. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yep. The green one.
Because we saw him perform at United. He,
yep,
did basically a private show at United FanCon, which our good buddy Chris posted about on,
yeah,
Facebook last night. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to all of the people that were close to him and all the fans who you know will miss his work. So I feel like we often start the show like this, but we're at that age now where that kind of stuff is stuff that happens. So okay, deep breath. So let's talk about comic books, Matthew. I'm sure that you have in front of you a list of some shows that we have coming up. So why don't we start there?
I
have a story that I want to share with
you. So we have the Northeast Comic Con, which is happening March 4th and 5th. And that is going to be, if you go to Northeast or necomiccon.com, you can check out the, or .org, I'm sorry. You can go to the website and check that one out. I'll be there with Keith and Amy. We are planning on doing that. The Hudson Valley Comic Con, May 6th and 7th. HV Comic Con, check that one out. We have Plastic City Comic Con, which is July 29th.
Yes.
Very, very,
in a
very
new venue.
Excited about that. We have Terrificon, which is coming up August 18th, 19th, and 20th, because this year we missed my birthday. And April 1st and 2nd, we have the
Connecticut Gamer Con
and Barry Comic Con, which is put on by our good friend Jason Moulton, who does the Vermont Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
So very excited for Mitch. I mean, it's funny at work. All these guys are coming up talking about going to Mohegan Sun for some gaming show. And I'm like, I know the guy who does that show.
That show is going to be absolutely amazing. Like, we talk about this every episode about the stuff that he's doing. And the thing about it's not as easy as when we talk about like Terrificon and stuff like that, where they just announce guest after guest after guest. With the gaming stuff, there's a lot of trying to arrange like tournaments and like streaming events and what games might be there and what consoles might be there. You know, we talked about how the Nintendo Switch launches a couple weeks before Connecticut Gamer Con. So there's all this stuff that kind of comes together at the last minute in terms of the things that you're going to be able to see and do there. But there will be tabletop gaming. There will be arcade gaming. There will be console gaming. There will be PC gaming. There will be panels. There will be programming there. And I think, and again, without spoiling anything, there's going to be some really exciting announcements. If you're anywhere in the New England area and you are a gamer, I think that this is going to be a really fun show. And this will be the first show that I sort of go to representing Co-op Critics, which is the gaming website that I have, and the YouTube channel that we have and stuff like that, because there's not that many gaming shows around here. And so having, you know, Mitch, who's been doing the comic show for so many years, now doing a gaming show is just such a great fit for him, for us, for all of it. And I think that this is going to be a really exciting show. So I'm excited about that. I'm super excited about Plastic City. That's at the Wallace Civic Center in Fitchburg, which, again, is a new venue. I also just checked in with Christine and Rob over at the Horror News Network about Connecticut Horror Fest, which is going to be happening in September this year. It used to be in July, I believe, and now it's going to be in September. And they are also moving into a new venue, which is exciting. So these shows that we kind of grew up with over the past few years are now evolving and really solidifying themselves. And I'm excited about that.
We have BingCon, which is the 30th of October.
Nice.
Which, very excited about that. So
yeah, it's basically our hometown Halloween show, which is awesome. Yeah. And last year, you know, Mark Mastel did an amazing job of creating this BingCon like zombie t-shirt that was awesome. And that show is just super fun because I am blown away by how many talented creators live in this general area that show up at that show every year.
We're walking distance from three or four people that, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, we all can walk and go to the store and bump into each other.
And the thing I like about that show is that it facilitates conversations where people start collaborating out of that.
Yep.
And that's really exciting. So, okay. So before we get into comics today, I wanted to briefly mention that Bryan Singer is going to be directing an X-Men television show, Matthew.
Really?
Over at Mashable, they said Bryan Singer has signed on to direct Fox's untitled action-adventure pilot in the X-Men universe from 20th Century Fox TV and Marvel Television. The pilot pickup was announced earlier this week. Matt Nix is penning the pilot and will serve as executive producer along with Singer. The project will focus on two ordinary parents who discover their children possess mutant powers. Forced to go on the run from a hostile government, the family joins up with an underground network of mutants and must fight to survive. So Mr. X-Men movie director now coming to TV to do, which is not, it wasn't, I know Zach Whedon is involved with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but was Joss Whedon involved with the early Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff on TV?
I believe so. He might have just been a name only, but he might have also just done the first couple and then passed it off.
See, now I've never been a huge fan of the X-Men movies, although I liked whatever the last one was that we went and saw.
Apocalypse. They do Apocalypse was very good.
They're okay. I think what he does is probably better suited to TV.
Mm.
Because some of the stuff that he does in the X-Men movie, like if I had one of my kind of things about the X-Men movies is they don't feel epic. Like they don't feel epic in scale. They don't feel like... They don't have a weight to them that you would expect like this blockbuster movie thing to have. But if you took that and applied it to television, I think that's a good fit for him. Like, and obviously he knows and is invested in that universe because he spent so much time with it over the years. I'm kind of excited about that. I'm also getting excited about Legion, which I keep seeing television commercials for.
Looks creepy.
Which I, again, not knowing anything about the X-Men, I don't even know what that show's about.
I don't either.
I don't even know who the main character is, the main mutant who has these like reality changing power. I don't know anything about it.
I just saw on the trailer today, I think, because I've seen the trailer a million and one times. I finally saw the Marvel TV Studios thing at the beginning of it.
Oh, okay.
Kind of showing it because up until then I was like, I don't know what this is.
But it's one of the people that did Fargo, the TV series, is working on this. And so it has this sort of surreal quality to it. So, I mean, it looks exciting. I'm definitely going to check that out. But I was just talking to somebody at work the other day about how we are in a place where superhero shows are the new crime procedural.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look back 10, 15 years ago and you look at Law and Order and NCIS and, you know, what are all the other, the stupid, like Criminal Minds and, you know, all those shows that where there was literally like a crime procedural on every single network on three nights a week and all of these things. We're now getting to a place with comic related and superhero related shows where on the CW, it's basically every night of the week.
Yeah.
And then on other channels now, they're popping up all over the place.
Monday night, you have to choose between if you're going to watch Gotham or Supergirl.
That new show Powerless starts tonight, which is set in the Marvel?
It's the DC universe.
Is it the DC universe? So, I mean, they're all over the place.
It's exciting. It's an exciting time.
And I don't even watch Gotham.
I am fired up about Gotham.
I have heard the same thing. I work with a guy who's like, I cannot believe you're not watching Gotham because it's amazing.
I almost gave up on it, and I'm glad I didn't because it's good.
Yeah.
It's real good.
There you go. So... prime time for that stuff. All right. So before we get into comics, just a quick mention for our sponsor, VikingOilsLLC.com. They take care of my beard in this inclement weather. I was out walking the dog today. Very windy out, very chill, very brisk, very dry. The beard just powers right through that, man.
I saw Gary yesterday at work and he said, hey, bald face.
Yeah, no, you're basically like a traitor.
Yep.
He's like, thanks a lot.
And I told him, I said, dude, I'm sick. Because when I get sick, I shave. That's like the first
thing I want everybody who listens to this show to quote that right now because I want that on a t-shirt. When I get sick, I shave.
Yeah. Because my face hurts. The whiskers burn. They itch. So
not me. I'm growing a beard for the both of us now.
There we go. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. People at work are like, so like when are you going to shave that?
When are you going to bring a gun to work and kill everybody?
I said, I don't know. I'll probably shave it April or May. Usually once baseball season starts, I think about shaving it. But then again, every time I shave it, I regret it.
Yep.
Because it gives me the clout at the metal shows, you know? Went from nice hair to nice beard, like I said before. So anyways, all right, let's talk about comic books today. We are going to start off today with, do you want to start with Captain America?
Yeah, I'll start with Captain America. Steve Rogers, Captain America, number 10, written by Nick Spencer, Jesus Saez, Ted. Now, we got a lot of people doing art on this one because there's a lot of jumping around. Ted Brandt. Rod Stein and Kevin LaBrancia are the artists on this one. There is a lot of flashbacks going on. And it's funny because if you go back to issue number one, when Captain America said, Hail Hydra, and the world as we knew it ended.
Right.
Completely fell apart. The train came off the tracks. Nick Spencer was getting death threats. People were freaking out. And here we are, 10 issues in, and Nick is doing basically what he did with Morning Glories. Telling a long-term story. This is a story that right now I'm still kind of like, all right, he's there. Oh, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? It the whole arc has taken place with a lot of flashbacks to young Steve Rogers and his mother being befriended by somebody who was at the beginnings of the Hydra movement. So the mother was taken in, kind of sold a bill of goods, And Steve was taken in as well. Now, Steve was this poor, frail kid in New York. And all of a sudden, he finds a place with all these really physically fit kids that are his age, and they're accepting of him and not beating him up. So the group in control of this is a German-based group, and they're looking at Steve Rogers going, you know what? Physical ability is not going to be his strong suit. He's mental. He's got the mental capacity that we need. He's got the heart that is what we desire. So now we're seeing coming up to where things are going to fit in. And in the last couple issues, they've been talking about Professor Erskine, the creator of the super soldier serum. And now in New York City, we have Steve Rogers, who's working at a diner, and he is kind of flashbacking to watching all these newsreels of Hitler marching through Germany and through Europe and just taking over all the countries, and him getting constantly rejected for his size to join the army. And now you have two men that are at a table and they're ordering coffee, and the woman comes over and says, Steve, you know what? Do you want to take this one? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll take care of it. And you see he's got a little bottle of poison. And one of the guys is an army general who says to him, hey, I know you. You're the guy that keeps coming into the recruitment station to sign up. And he's like, well, yeah, you know, and you keep turning me away. And he goes, son, I wish everybody had your heart. But when this war is over, you're going to thank me that you didn't have to go and take part in all this carnage and the horrors that are going to come up. And he goes, doesn't matter. I just need to do my job. And he has the poison in his hand as Professor Erskine is telling him, you know, hey, can I get another cup of coffee, please? And you're like, oh, this is what's going to happen. He's going to poison him and kill him. Now we go to the now, and you have S.H.I.E.L.D. Director Hill has just been removed as S.H.I.E.L.D. director. She is now out.
It's funny because I was just going to say, isn't it cool that Maria Hill is the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. now?
She is out.
Apparently not anymore.
Get out. You're out. And Captain America's testimony was one of the testimonies that sort of did her undoing. And the fact and the reason that he undid it and wanted her out was not because she was doing such a horrible job, because of all these bad things. He wants Sharon Carter in charge.
Oh.
And Sharon is kind of meeting with congressional hearers, because there's a lot of bills that are coming through, a lot of things that need to be passed. And they need to have somebody they can trust, because there's a lot of wiretapping laws, all these things that are going to be, you know, when you talk about Homeland Security and how they can almost do anything in the under the guise of fighting terrorism,
keeping
people safe, which, you know, political or not, whatever I need to do to keep my family safe, just keep doing it. You want to listen to my phone calls? Go right ahead. I don't care. But this is like a whole different set of rules that are going on. There's also an alien race just outside of the rim of our galaxy that's coming to invade us. I don't know if there's some new event in the Marvel Universe coming up, but apparently aliens are coming in to invade. And Maria Hill ends up on Space Station Alpha Flight. And she's there, and she's with
that's with Captain Marvel, right?
Captain Marvel is there, and they're kind of arguing back and forth about stuff. And she's like, yeah, so you're not S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, so now you're here, and I hope you're not going to be causing a problem here, and I hope you can take orders. Meanwhile, you see Steve is now going into a room, takes off his uniform, draws the Hydra S.H.I.E.L.D. octopus skull thing on his chest, and now he's having a conversation with the Red Skull. And the Red Skull's telling him that, you know, I can't believe how careless you are and what's going on. He goes, we've got a lot of riding on this. We have an alien race coming in to invade. We've got all this stuff going on. We've got people in the right spot. And you are going to blow it because you couldn't kill Jack Flagg. Jack Flagg's going to live. And when he does, he's going to tell everybody that you pushed him out of the plane. And we can't get at him because he's under high security. So we need to figure something out. And he's like, you know, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of it, Hair Skull.
And that was during the whole Hail Hydra thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So to me, and that was the most shocking part. Hail Hydra, no big deal. Throwing Jack Flagg out of a plane, that bothered me. So now we go back to the flashback, and we have Steve, who is looking to put poison in the cup of Professor Erskine. As this is going on, somebody breaks into the restaurant, grabs one of the waitress's pocketbooks and runs out. And Steve haphazardly takes after him, gets him in the corner, and you see that it's a guy that Steve knows. And it almost looks like that was done to not have Steve do what he was going to do.
Right.
And then when Steve comes back, he is all beat up. And let me get to that one after. So Cap now walks through he walks into Jack Flagg's hospital bed, and he's looking, and he's ready to put a syringe into the IV bag to kill him. And what was her name? I forgot her name, but the girl that was part of that group too, one of the Flagg people came in, and she's like, "Oh my gosh, Steve, I'm so glad you're here. I can't believe that we're going to pull the plug and we've got to let him go. He's not going to recover. His family's all mad at me for doing this, but it was my decision. And the doctors are saying he's never going to wake up." So she's really upset. Steve's upset. We're seeing how this is really, really having an effect on her. And now Steve's kind of thinking, "Huh, I might be in the clear." And now we go to him seeing Sharon, and he's talking to Sharon about, "You know what? I think you'd be great at running S.H.I.E.L.D. I think this is a great opportunity. I think that this is what S.H.I.E.L.D. needs." And she goes, "No, it's not me. It's you. You need to run S.H.I.E.L.D. And that is how that part ends. Now we go to the flashback where he walks back into the restaurant. He's all beat up. He gives the waitress back her purse. And then the general who was there with Professor Erkstein is telling him, "You know, that was foolish. You shouldn't have done that. You're going to get yourself killed. You know, you got a big heart, but you don't have a very big head. You're not smart when you're thinking about this." And Professor goes, "You know what? Maybe we can help this guy. Maybe if he comes in tomorrow, we can do something." And that is where this issue ends, where he's basically saying, "You know what? Come on in. We'll see if we can give you the super soldier formula."
Yeah.
And that is how this ends. And it's, again, it's so funny how this one started. Nick Spencer is such a slow burn writer. And I love slow burns. I have really, really enjoyed this. I think the story is intriguing because it's one of those things where it's not going to hold. I mean, he is not going to
be. I mean, it sounds a lot like the whole Winter Soldier thing.
Yeah.
Where it was a longer game that they were playing. When he came back, people were up in arms about that.
Yep.
And then you let it play out and people are like, "Oh, that's actually one of the best Captain America stories of all time."
And that's what this is turning into. It's turning into one of the best stories because – as I'm reading this, it's almost like you're watching James Bond. You know he's going to get out of every trap. It's how he's going to get out. This, I'm going, I don't know how he's going to change back.
I mean, I'm assuming that what we're talking about here is like implanted memories or something
like that. It looks like that's what it is.
What he's having flashbacks to in the past are sort of rewritten memories of what actually happened.
And, you know, you're thinking that. You're thinking, is he just manipulating it? You know, is he manipulating the situation that they think he's being manipulated in?
So right. It's
pretty good stuff.
Alrighty. Well, we're now going to go over to Red Stylo Media. Enrique Jiang is someone who we've talked to many times on this podcast. And Red Stylo puts out fantastic books. They do a lot of anthologies, but they also work with creators on some pretty interesting projects. And this one called Ophelia's Revenge is a one-shot that I think fits perfectly with what Red Stylo is known for because it's a Shakespearean twist. Mm. You know, the last time we talked about, I believe, House of Montresor, which was a Edgar Allan Poe twist. Here we are. Ophelia's Revenge is a one-shot. It is written by James McGee. The original concept is from Laura Guzzo. Art by Alex Clark. Colors by Jan Velasquez. And letters by Mark Mullaney. And Enrique Jiang and Mark Mullaney are the editors here. Of course, it's published by Red Stylo. This was a Kickstarter project, and I backed this. I am a sucker for... if you say Shakespeare, if you say Edgar Allan Poe, if you know, that kind of stuff. Obviously, if you say Lovecraft, you've got mm-hmm. my attention. And this one here is, I had no idea what to expect out of it. I originally assumed that it was Ophelia from Hamlet
yep.
who was coming back, and this was going to be like a period piece. Well, in fact, when you open it up, we are at what amounts to a Renaissance fair. And you have sort of a Shakespeare in the Park type of production that they are rehearsing for of Hamlet. And so you've got the guy who is playing Hamlet and you've got the girl who is playing Ophelia and they're going through their scene and he can't remember his lines. And so he starts to stumble and he's like, "Line," and they're reading him his lines and his name is Larry. And he's like, "I can't remember this stupid junk. You got to be kidding me." And the director's like, "All right, let's take five." And so they go to take five. And you see that these two actors are dating. And so you've got Larry there who's talking about, you know, "I better go study my lines." And you have the girl whose name is, where the heck is it? Jean. She is saying, "Well, hey, why don't we go back to my trailer? And, you know, we can do something else." And he's like, "No, you know," and they start having a conversation. And in that conversation, you see him kind of hinting that maybe their relationship isn't as serious as she thought it was. And so Jean's kind of following him and questioning him, and he's kind of being very noncommittal. And she's like, wait, are you breaking up with me? And he's like, well, you know, after this whole thing is over, you're going to go do your thing and I'm going to go do my thing. And they sort of get into a conversation that he didn't want to have. And she ends up slapping him because it becomes clear that he had no intention of having a long-term relationship with her. And so they end up walking away. She ends up going to the trailer of the fortune teller, Lady Miranda, mistress of the ancient tarot arts. So she walks by this woman's trailer and she's like, look, you're a witch. You have to help me. The love spell that you taught me, it didn't work on this guy. He's not falling in love with me. And she's like, whoa, 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 relax. And she's like, I did everything that you said. You know, I took a strand of my hair and his, I put it in the pouch. I buried it beneath the rose bush. You know, we made a wish under the new moon. And the woman's like, Jean, there are no guarantees with this stuff and there's no liability for me. So, you know, stop harassing me about this. And Jean is basically saying, look, I'm going to tell everybody you're a big fraud. And I'm going to tell them that you are also practicing witchcraft because she's not supposed to be doing that here. She does that to sort of make some extra money on the side. She said, I'll expose you if you don't help me. And they get into the trailer and they start having a conversation and it becomes pretty clear that what Jean is looking for is not another love spell. She is looking for revenge. And so she's telling Miranda, I want revenge. And Miranda's saying, look, you don't want to go down that path because you start messing around with that stuff. She says, revenge is hungry. It's never satisfied with just one person. It branches out and it snares everyone in its sight. And she's like, you don't want to do that. You know what you need to do? You need to work on forgiveness. So here's what you're going to do. You know, you're going to do this spell. You're going to make a wish and you're going to forgive him and everything's going to be great. So she gives her all of these ingredients for the spell. Of course, Jean walks away having no intention of wishing for forgiveness. She does this spell and ends up throwing this vial into the little pond. And she says, may you get exactly what you deserve. So, of course, she's still looking for revenge. And lo and behold, rising out of the water a little bit later, you see what is sort of a cross between Swamp Thing and Ophelia from the Shakespearean play, which is sort of like this is the form that revenge has taken. Which I thought was really cool because here, you know, you start off with which is basically a very poor stage production of Hamlet. And now here we have basically like the spirit of Ophelia coming back. So she rises out of the pond and a couple of people happen to be walking by and the guy that's walking by with his wife starts taking a look at her because she's stark naked as she walks out of this thing. And he's like, wow, well, what's going on over here? And all of a sudden, these vines come up out of the ground and they start strangling him. And one of them gets him right in the family jewels.
Boy.
And she says, when lust doth prick, dull the sword. So she's sort of spouting Shakespearean quotes as she goes through. And what you see is that now she goes on a rampage. And every single person in this Renfair area that has ever done anything remotely wrong is having vengeance taken upon them, you know, and as you see this montage and you'll see, Matt, I'll show you.
Nice.
You see all these horrible things happening to people and it says their name and what they did. So Ryan Holiday engaged, looked at the cleaning lady's butt. He gets killed. Neil Clark wouldn't let Fifi McLuffins nibble on his turkey leg. He gets killed. This other guy over here, father of three, refused to buy his daughter a doll. He gets killed.
Oh boy.
So literally anybody who's done anything wrong gets killed. And at one point, you see Jean walk outside and the place is like burning down and it's like the apocalypse outside. And she's like, oh my God, we need help over here. And she sees this version of Ophelia coming at her. And she's like, holy crap, Larry, she's going to go kill Larry. So she runs to her, you know, temporary boyfriend here and runs up to him. And the guy's like, what the heck is going on around here? People are dying and everything. And she's like, look, I forgive you. I forgive you for everything, you know, blah, 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 blah. And as she's talking to him, he gets completely ripped apart by Ophelia and she starts screaming. And she's starting to realize, of course, that what the witch told her is exactly what's happening, that she went into this with revenge in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
And revenge doesn't just stop with one person. And so she runs into the witch again and she's like, you know, I told you that this was going to happen. And she says, how do I stop it? And she said, I told you it has to be through forgiveness. And so she goes over to the body of her boyfriend, Larry, and in a heartfelt way, basically apologizes and said, you know, and gives almost a Shakespearean soliloquy. And as she talks to him, you see growing out of his face starts this, this stuff, this purple hyacinth, which is a symbol of forgiveness. And so she thinks it's all going to be over. And then this Ophelia creature comes over to her and says, and there's rue for you and some for me, and basically gives her a kiss and then kind of melts and fades away. And she's like, oh, that's great. This is over. And as soon as she says that, she starts to choke because rue is an actual herb. It's an actual plant. Starts growing out of her mouth and she starts like vomiting it up. And then it sort of cascades over her. Like, did you ever see the movie Troll?
Yes.
Remember when the dude basically got turned into a plant?
Yes.
That's exactly what happens to her. And she ends up being left like that. And that is how the story ends, with the witch basically saying, you know, I should have listened to my sisters and taken the year off. No witches in Hamlet, Mary. Save it for the Scottish play, they told me. She said, but I had to earn a few bucks, didn't I? And at a Ren fair, she said, Walmart isn't looking so bad right now. And she kind of walks out of there. And this whole Ren fair place is burning down. And you see the basically vegetable version of Jean's corpse there at the end. And that's the way it ends. So to me, this story actually did remind me of movies like Troll. Like it definitely has a very clear horror element to it. Clearly, the Shakespearean influences are all over this. And I love the nod to Ophelia. And I love the fact that they twisted it and made it like a Ren Faire production of Hamlet. All of that stuff was awesome. The artwork is really good, especially because when things start to pick up the pace, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in this book. And trying to fit everything into a one shot is difficult because you only have so much real estate. And I think they did a really nice job with it. I really enjoyed this book. I have not enjoyed a book from Red Stylo since I started following their stuff. And this one is no exception. So Ophelia's Revenge, if you go to redstylo.com, you can probably pick this up in their store now because I know the Kickstarter's over and it came out. You should be able to get a digital copy. And if you go to patreon.com/redstylo, if you become a patron of theirs, you can get comics every single month from them. And it's really awesome. So this is yet another one to add to my collection that I really enjoyed.
Very nice. So going to tone it down a little bit to the world of Archie. Number 16, and it says on the cover featuring Cheryl Blossom, which is very apropos timing. Considering,
well, this book will be a good segue.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. Considering Cheryl Blossom is one of the main characters, probably the biggest protagonist in the entire Riverdale series coming up. But before we talk about that, story by Mark Wade with Lori Matsumoto and Joe Eisma doing the art, Jack Morelli the letters, Andre Szymanowicz doing the colors, Victor Gorlick, editor-in-chief, Mike Pellerito, editor, John Goldwater, publisher. And we are, again, so I said, 16 issues into the brand new Archie. And it is, I think it's been pretty successful. People are talking about Archie. Granted, we miss the old style, but as long as Mark Wade is writing great stories, like I will admit, I struggle with the Jughead book. That's the one I am not really enjoying like I want to. Reggie and Me just came out, loved it, thought it was fantastic. Betty and Veronica, kind of a hit and miss. I'm not really enjoying that one like I want to. But with the Archie one, this is just fantastic. And you've got Archie who is talking about meeting, we're kind of introducing Dilton Doily to the world. And he's talking about how Dilton is an inventor. He's going to be making some stuff someday that people are really going to love. And he's going to further the world. And it's funny because he's wearing sort of the Matt Smith doctor outfit is what he is wearing as he's walking around. The bow tie, the skinny jeans, the shirt, the blue shirt. And he's talked about an app that he has made. And he says it's his app. And it's going to find all the romantic spots around Riverdale. And then Jughead goes, oh, you just invented Yelp. He's like, look, I did not invent Yelp. This is not what I invented. And everybody keeps telling me that. But it's not just for places. It's for the experiences, how you can see beautiful sunsets, romantic walks, or whatever. And then Reggie walks by and sees it, and he goes, oh, you can use it for anything, huh? And then you realize that things are going to start turning pretty bad. So Archie is narrating it saying, oh, yeah, that's Reggie. And he is an Olympic-level jerk. And he basically will look to do anything to destroy anything that anybody does. And he says, so this is Moose. And Moose is very protective of Dilton and doesn't like Reggie. So he's kind of hovering over Dilton as he's, as Reggie's saying, you know, oh, I can bet you I can do this, blah, 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 blah. So he's over. And now you see Reggie has an app on his phone and he says, well, you can rate anything you want. So let's put this to the test. So he snaps a picture of a lady walking and it says, I'm with stupid, 0 stars. And he goes, oh boy, this is going to be epic. So you can imagine what is going to happen. Now, meanwhile, Veronica is in France. She was sent away to boarding school and she is coming back. But she has found out that her nemesis, Cheryl Blossom, who she got kind of booted out of the school in France, is now in Riverdale and she is meeting everybody there. Veronica skiing down the slopes, talking to her, who was that? Smithers, the butler. And he is out there walking his chihuahua in LA, saying, you know, well, when you come back to Riverdale, hopefully things will get back to normal. So now you see that this app is really starting to cause problems. Jughead walks into Pop's and you see Pop Tate, chef, 1 star, overcharges for food. What's with the mustache? He smells. And he is all bent out of shape. Then you have Miss Grundy, 1 half star. What an itch bag. Ugly old crow. She smells. We'll be discussing Miss Grundy as we talk about Riverdale in just a few moments. And you see that she is all bent out of shape about this. Nancy Woods, 1 star. She thinks she's all that. Sucks. Makes me sick. They all think it's Dilton that is doing it because he presented his app to everybody. And all of a sudden you find out when everybody is all upset, he goes home and he sees, he's like, you know what? If I shut off the server, nobody can go on this anymore. I can take care of this. I can take care of this. And as he goes in, you see a pile of dust where the server and everything used to be. And you realize that when he goes online, he sees Reggie and it says, Reggie Mantle, 6 stars, king of cool, deaf doable, hot. He's like, oh, I guess I know who stole my thing. So there's a knock on the door at the Mantle residence. And all of a sudden, Big Moose is at the door. He slams the door and Reggie starts freaking out. He kind of starts slithering down and he tippy toes out of there because he's going to go into the back and get the servers. And then you see a scene where the thunder is happening and he is coming towards Reggie to kill him. And then you see the next panel. The computers are back. Everything is back. And he's like, oh, thank you, Marmaduke. He's like, no problem. Never liked that Mantle. And he goes, did he give you any trouble? And he kind of just goes, yeah, well, whatever. Because, you know, he messed him up. And he says, you know what? You help me, I help you. We're friends. This is what we do. And then you see on the last page, he says, you know what? The way that Dilton got his reputation back and people started liking him again is he put on a firework show using nothing but homemade, eco-friendly materials. And said everyone is into keeping Riverdale clean and safe. And he also gave it the best thing he ever saw. And then you see at the end that he's kind of looking at Betty with like this look in his eyes like, oh, I love you and I can't wait to see you. So the epilogue is the prologue. And it says at the end, you've got Cheryl and Jason talking and they're talking about how they are going to destroy Riverdale and Veronica before Veronica even comes back. And you see she's going to do it by taking out her friend Betty. So she's talking to Betty and she's telling Betty, so why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. And she's telling her all about her boyfriend, Syed, who was the guy she was dating after her and after the lipstick incident.
Right.
From the first 3 or 4 issues, the baseball player. And so you see at the end, you see Jason being introduced to Syed. So you know that trouble is going to happen. So that is where this story ends. And then you have a photo gallery of Riverdale from the TV series. And you have some photos, some shots with current pictures to kind of show the similarities and what a great job they did and how every character that has a book is being represented right now. So a lot of fun. The cover gallery, Joe Eisma, Marguerite Salvage, and Dean Tripp did the art, the covers for this one. I got the Marguerite cover, which has Cheryl Blossom blowing out a flaming picture of Veronica. Great book, great time. You can check out, you can go to archie.com. You can get the downloads. You can also go to Comixology, where all Archie comics are available.
That's true. Yes, you can go to Comixology.
Free 30-day trial.
They just had a big Archie sale, too. The cool thing about that is obviously they're able to do
big sales on a regular basis.
Yes.
So and any given week, they have 50% off this collection, 50% off this collection. So it's a good time to go and catch up on stuff. But that's a good segue, Matthew, into our boob tube and big screen bonanza.
Yes.
Let's talk about Riverdale, because Riverdale premiered last week. As we record this now, the second episode is going to be airing tonight. And I have it on good authority from Mr. Mike Pellerito himself that tonight is one of his favorite episodes of the season.
Really?
He said for tonight's episode. Yes, because I congratulated him last week
yes.
on that, because this is kind of amazing when you think about the path that Archie Comics has taken to now this show being on television. It's
yeah.
absolutely mind-blowing. So, and we've waited forever for it now, right? So it finally premiered the other night. And you being a longtime Archie fan, old school Archie fan,
yeah.
I want to know what you thought about Riverdale.
It was really interesting. I loved it. And I love the fact that I loved it. I kind of went into it thinking, this is not going to be good. This is going to be Twin Peaks, but with Jughead and Reggie and Archie and Betty and Veronica. There were a couple things that I thought were really interesting. The thing that I love the most about it was the actress who played Betty. There's something about
her. She's
great. She to me is like Melissa Benoist on Supergirl.
She's the, I would agree with you on that. I think that, well, go ahead.
She to me is the main reason I love that show so much. You've got the dynamics that you would expect. You have Luke Perry as Archie's dad, who is expecting Archie to take over the family business someday, then finds out that he's not. Then you find out that he and his mother are split up. Then you find out that Veronica's mother dated Archie's dad back in the old days. And you've got all these little triangles kind of making Riverdale be a little more close than you might have thought it was. I thought Dylan Sprouse as Jughead, I thought he was great.
He was great.
Even though he had very limited stuff, there's a little bit of a mysteriousness about him. Cheryl Blossom, every time she's on, you want to punch her in the face, which is pretty much what you're expecting. I thought the girl who played Veronica did a great job. I love the dynamic between the three because it's very believable. It's very much like it is in the comic book. You have two girls that really care and love each other, and they both like the same guy. I did not like the snottiness of Josie from Josie and the Pussycats. I understand when you first meet her, Archie's talking to her about, I want you to help me with my music. She's thinking he's trying to sell her songs. I hope that smooths out a little bit. I thought the Miss Grundy Archie thing was interesting, and she's hot. So we can play that one and let's see how that one goes. But it definitely adds a very dangerous element to the whole thing. The character I did not like was Kevin Keller. I did not like the way they portrayed him. I put a little write up on Facebook and said, I thought that they played him to every stereotype that he is not. And Kevin Keller is a very strong character. He's very passionate about his friends. He's very singular. He's very honorable. And this was a kid that did not seem very honorable. The whole thing with Moose kind of threw me a little bit. And the murder mystery at the end, I think, is a really cool element to keep things going. But, what I didn't like aside, I loved it. I can't wait for the second episode. I think they've got something. I think that if you're watching it looking for old school Archie, you're certainly not going to get it. And the kid who plays Archie, I forgot his name. I can find it really quick, but I think he did a great job. I think he carries the show very well. And it's funny when you see him and Luke Perry standing there together, you can buy him as father and son because there's a certain look that they both have. And his name is KJ Apa.
Okay.
So loved it.
I like the Twin Peaks aspects of the show.
Yep.
Overall, I absolutely loved the show. I thought that both Betty and Veronica were fantastic. The actresses that play both of them, they did a phenomenal
yes.
job with that. I thought they were better than Archie. Mm. I mean, I liked Archie. I love Luke Perry as his father.
Yes.
I think that he's super comfortable in that role. I just felt like that role doesn't feel forced at all. You know,
yeah.
like it's like you always wonder, like, how does the most popular guy from 90210, you know, adapt to being the father figure on this show? Totally fine.
I think he's playing Dylan as a father.
Yeah. I mean, basically just completely He just worked in that role. I also liked Veronica's mom. Like I thought.
Oh, the murderer. That's my quick one
That's who you think it is?
Yep.
I think it's totally Cheryl. That's
it's
who
too obvious
it
that it's Cheryl.
Because I think that the one thing that was clear for me from the get-go is like, oh, this is the flowers in the attic.
They're
Cheryl
playing that
and
relationship
Jason
up,
from
yep.
Afterlife with Archie.
Yes.
So the thing that drew me in immediately was we're playing with some Afterlife with Archie stuff here.
Yep.
Okay. Which I think is a good place because isn't Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa the main
yes.
guy here
yep.
who wrote that series?
Yep.
So clearly his darker take on those characters that in the Afterlife with Archie universe, you're focused on sort of the events and maybe not necessarily the darkness of certain characters there, but clearly that's where he's pulling these characters
yes.
from. This is almost like the Afterlife with Archie universe before the zombies show
yep.
up. You know what I mean? Which the fact that we could at some point get Sabrina in this show
I'm very excited about
mind-boggling
that.
Yep. to me because we're already getting Josie. So yep. like that kind of stuff is awesome. Loved the diner.
Uh-huh.
Loved Pop. Like that, all that stuff worked great. My only concern is the DC New 52 concern. If every character is jaded and dark, who do you root for?
Yep.
That's my only concern. Mm-hmm. Right now, I feel like Betty is the closest thing to the protagonist of this show.
Yeah.
Because Archie has made some very questionable choices to this point in mm-hmm. the show, having an affair with his teacher being one of them.
Yes.
So, and clearly something happened between him and Jughead, which is also very interesting.
Yeah.
So that's my only concern is like you, when you go too on the nose with edgy, you run the risk of becoming too edgy.
Mm-hmm.
And then none of the characters are likable.
Yeah.
And so that was my only concern watching it. Betty, to me, came out of that first episode as the character that you are rooting for.
Yes.
She is now the underdog. You have Veronica, who just showed up. She's already been making out with Archie. The way that Archie basically told her it was never going to happen between them at the end of that
broke my heart.
Pretty brutal.
Yep.
And so, to me, this is Betty's show.
Yeah.
And even though Archie gets a lot of screen time, this is Betty's show now. And I hope that they keep her because you already see she's got her anger issues. She's got the anxiety. She's got the pressure of home. Her mom, who is played by Mad Chinamic, who is from Twin Peaks. And is back in Twin Peaks for the new season of Twin Peaks that is coming up. So there is most definitely a very conscious nod to Twin Peaks, which I applaud. The thing about Twin Peaks is like Twin Peaks had also a sense of innocence mixed in with the absolute craziness that went on in that show. And it also had a sense of humor.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of humor
nope.
in this first episode of Riverdale. And you can't be all dark. Like that's literally why I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason to watch that show if you are looking for any sort of hope whatsoever. So that's my – and again, we're one episode in. But that's my only thing is like if everybody's got a dark checkered past and nobody's actually a decent person, then you run the risk of not having likable characters. So that aside, I thought they covered a lot of ground in that first episode.
Yep.
And to me, as you said, it is the easy answer to say that Cheryl was the one that killed Jason. But I think they might go with that because they're on the nose about a lot of other stuff in the show.
Yeah.
So, are we giving them too much credit by saying, no, it couldn't be, Cheryl, it has to be somebody else. But
the interesting thing that I know a lot of people were freaking out with before it aired with the previews was there was the kiss of Betty and Veronica that happened in the cheerleading tryout.
That to me was the dumbest moment in the first episode. And, Cheryl immediately called them out like this, the fake lesbian kiss thing. To me, it just didn't serve any purpose. Like that, to my knowledge, has never been part of the relationship
nope.
between Betty and
nope.
Veronica. I don't know why they did,
I mean, you knew why they did it. They put it in for the shock value, or at least in the trailer. Like when you saw the preview, it's
sure.
like, I remember thinking, are they going to go there with this? Is this going to be some part of it? Are they going to play that up just to get the audience in here to go on that particular
angle? To me, it was
angle?
Just another edgy thing. Everything's got to be edgy. And in that moment, it was done for shock value. And Cheryl immediately called them out on it, which I thought was pretty cool.
And that scene, so when you see that scene play out, I was laughing so hard because like they had the kiss. And then she's like, oh, yeah, that's so 1995, blah, 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 blah. And then you see Veronica like, all right, well, what do I got to do next?
Right.
It just was perfect. And I again, I'm really looking forward to tonight. I can't wait to see how this plays out.
Cheryl does a good job of making you hate her as the villain.
Oh, man.
She is the villain.
Yep.
At least in this early stage of the show, and does a very good job of making you dislike her.
Yep. And you get glimpses of Reggie. You see Moose just for a little bit.
Yeah. Now, Reggie doesn't seem like a total jerk. Like
He almost seems like the jock jerk.
But the irony is that because almost everybody's a jerk, he comes off as like kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like he just comes off as a good friend to Archie.
Yeah.
Nothing in the first episode made you be like, oh, well, that's Reggie.
Yeah.
He's that jerk yeah. guy. You know what I mean? So it's interesting how they're sort of playing with that. And my only other, you know, kind of gripe with the first episode is very little Jughead.
Yeah.
Jughead is the narrator.
He narrated
so
the whole
he
thing.
Is sort of ever present, but really only shows up in a few scenes. I do like the idea that he is sort of this observer who is chronicling what is happening in Riverdale and that he is going to be the narrator of the show. I like all of that setup,
yeah.
but I think that I want to see more of his character because that to me is going to be really interesting to see who he is on this show.
And the way it ended with him saying and narrating. So at 2 o'clock tomorrow, that's when the big arrest happens. And
right.
That'll obviously be tonight. So the show is moving pretty quick.
Yeah. So cool stuff. Also, the other shows have come back.
Yep.
I unfortunately have not been able to watch Supergirl at all because my son's basketball practice is in the middle of that show every single week. So I'm going to have to catch up on demand on all of that.
I am a little disappointed in this season so far.
Really?
And I think the main reason is I don't like the Guardian storyline with Jimmy Olsen.
And I haven't seen any of that
like
because I've been missing those episodes. Like I was so caught up in the Alex and Maggie storyline
yep.
and what a phenomenal storyline that
yep.
has been and how that character has really become such a centerpiece of the show that I had only gotten glimpses of the Guardian thing with Jimmy and I haven't been watching them since. So if that's taken center stage, yeah, I didn't think that was a good idea anyways. I think it's too early
yeah.
for him to be putting on the superhero garb. I worry about that with all of the shows.
Yeah.
I worry about it with Flash as well.
Because Flash now all of a sudden, and Cisco.
Yeah, because again, what seems to be the pattern with these shows is that they get bloated.
Yep.
Too many characters, not enough storylines, and then they cut a bunch of characters out, but then they do the same thing over again and bring a whole bunch of new characters
yeah.
in. Like I felt like, we can just talk about like for Flash now, I like their core group. I certainly am not going to say that I don't want Wally to be part of the
mm-hmm.
group because having Kid Flash in this season has been freaking awesome.
Yep.
Now they have Julian.
They bring Julian in.
Who I like his character too, but my fear is always, and maybe it's just from a writer standpoint, like my fear is always, where are the storylines for all
yes.
of these characters? And what is happening this season on Arrow when you have Diggle, who has basically gotten squeezed out of the storylines, and Thea. Thea is basically missing in action now. They got her off doing stuff for the mayor's office. And then you have Diggle, who's been in prison most of the time for no other reason than they don't have a story for him right now. So they have to have a storyline that takes him off the shelf because what Arrow has become about this season is the search for the new Black Canary. And so, which this week's episode, as I watched last night, was awesome. It's been a great season. I really like a lot of the stuff they're doing. They just brought Talia al Ghul in. We just found out last night on Arrow that Talia al Ghul is the one who trained Ollie to be an archer. And so that storyline is just starting in his flashbacks. Now the flashbacks are about her
mm-hmm.
and her saving him from the Russian mob and her sort of training him and stuff like that and sort of teaching him how to harness this dark side of his personality sort of thing. So that's been really good. The Flash stuff, I love HR. He's my favorite character this whole season.
I was hoping he was gone after this episode.
Literally
last week,
my favorite character this whole season. But I will tell you right now, I am a diehard Tom Cavanaugh fan
yep.
because of Ed. Ed is one of my favorite television shows of all time, and it has never been collected on DVD.
Really?
Ever. So I always look every time we go to one of our shows
yep.
to see if there's a bootleg of it because it has never been collected on DVD. One of my favorite TV shows of all
wow.
time. And so as soon as he came on the show, I was ecstatic. I was really bummed when he was a bad guy. And now that it seems like, and I've been worried this season that he was going to be a bad guy.
Like he's sending,
I was worried the whole time. I'm like, please do not make him be a bad guy again. I'm going to be really upset if he's, and the fact that he isn't, and the personality of the guy he's playing is more like the real Tom Cavanaugh, who is a very funny guy, very good friends with Michael Ian Black. And they, they have a podcast together called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. And they haven't done an episode for a while, but it's basically them having a different – they'll have a package of Oreos and they'll do 45 minutes just improvising comedy between the two of them as they're reviewing these Oreos that they're eating. So if you have any – if you haven't listened to Mike and Tom Eat Snacks, you need to. It's fantastic. And there's like 100 episodes of it.
Wow.
And it's brilliant. But I love him. And so I love that character on the show. And this was an interesting one this week because he was almost off the show.
Yes. And they bring in Gypsy.
Yeah. If there's one thing that I have a complaint about this year, it's Savitar. Savitar to me seems stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't, but like, what is his deal in the comics?
I don't even know if there was a Savitar. I'm trying to think because I don't remember.
And if there was, he didn't look like Megatron from the Transformers,
exactly,
right?
Like what he
from Michael
like.
Bay's Transformers.
Yes.
I don't like that whole thing. Like, I understand that the end thing is that Iris's life is in danger, and if they don't change the future, she is going to be dead. I think that is an interesting storyline.
Very interesting.
More so because of how she's dealing with it. Not the whole damsel in distress thing, but the fact that she has now decided, I have this much time to live. I'm going to create a legacy for myself. And that means I have to stop being in the background and go out and crack these big stories and do that kind of stuff. And so that's been interesting. But my fear with all that stuff is too many characters, not enough storylines to go around. Who's getting the short straw on any given week? And like in Arrow, it's been Diggle.
Yeah.
And this year for Flash, you know, it's definitely been, they had to get rid of John Wesley Shipp basically. Yep. And, you know, now that he's Jay Garrick, they can bring him in for an episode here or there. But you saw that whole transition happen because they just don't have enough story to go around.
And Caitlin is the one, I think, now getting the least amount of work because basically her lines are, uh-oh, my dampeners aren't working well. Can we fix it?
Uh-huh.
And then, uh-oh, I'm feeling a little angry and cold right now.
Yeah, and make no mistake, I love these shows. Yes. Like, I watch them every week with my son. Mm-hmm. We absolutely love them. These are just the thoughts that I have as I'm watching them. I'm like, oh, I hope that they don't short shrift this character, or because I like Cisco turning into Vibe.
Yeah.
I like him getting to use his powers. I like the fact that his sense of humor has come back. He's, you know, the sort of like everyman core of that show. But along with Cisco, along with Wally, when everybody has powers, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You have to bring in new characters after that, right? And so we go through that whole cycle again where now we've powered up everybody that we have. So we either have to get rid of some of them and bring in some fresh characters or whatever. And that's a problem that all of these shows sort of have. So yeah, the whole Guardian thing, to go back to Supergirl, I don't see why they had to go there yet. Mm-hmm. I think that could have waited a while.
Yeah.
But I love that show. I mean, I love each of those shows for how different they are than one another, despite some of those sort of storyline things that they fall into. Like, I love the just sort of optimism of Supergirl. I used to love that about The Flash, but it's been darker lately. I want to see some of that come back into The Flash. Arrow, to me, is supposed to be dark, and it's supposed to be this constant struggle between the darkness and the light sort of thing. And I kind of like that about it. And I think it has really found its feet again. So, and I love Talia al Ghul coming in. Like, that to me is really interesting.
And Legends of Tomorrow has moved to Tuesdays.
That I haven't been watching as much.
And I will say it got a lot better. The first season was very, very hit or miss, more miss. Last season, I thought they did a great job trying to right the ship. This year, they're putting together better episodes. But it's funny because you have Merlin and who's the other one? Black or Mr. Black or Dark from
– Damian Dark.
Damian Dark from Arrow.
Oh, I did – you know what? I did watch some of this week's one where they're trying to go for the Spear of Destiny.
Yeah, and they're trying to save George Lucas.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
See, that stuff is a riot right there. That's the great stuff that they've got to stick with. And right now, it seems like Legends is the lighthearted one of the shows because there seems to be a lot more of a comedy angle, especially with Commander Steel coming in here. But with – as far as other – like a couple other great shows, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I think we're five episodes in. Five for Five. Every episode has been amazing.
Yep.
The Mick, have you caught that yet?
No, I keep hearing it's awesome.
Oh, boy. It is fantastic. I was so sick and tired and wanted to go to bed, but then saw that The Mick was on after we watched The Flash and had to watch that. So those two shows are win-wins. And if you think that Always Sunny is a little too extreme and a little too much for you, The Mick's only a fourth. It's only a fourth of
the offensive insults.
So right. You can check that one out, and you can almost watch that with the family. So there's some good stuff going on. Good TV. Man in the High Castle has been really good. I just started watching Frontier with Jason Momoa, and it takes place during the fur trade in the late 1700s up in Canada, the Hudson Bay area. And if you like your throat slit really slowly with a lot of blood and gurgling, this is definitely the show for you.
Hmm. I do like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I'll have to check that out.
Apparently the fur trade was a little more vicious than I thought.
Hmm.
And natives give Whitey their comeuppance, which is that was a selling point.
So for top 10 show for you, right?
A lot of people are like, yep, dude, you guys are getting the Whitey. All right. Getting your own Whitey. I like it.
Well, on that uplifting note, that will wrap up this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So let us know what you're watching. There's so many movies I want to catch up on, man. I have not been to the movies in a while, but I do want to see the new Resident Evil.
Batman Lego.
I'm interested. I do want to see Batman Lego. I do want to see the new Rings movie that's coming out.
Oh, it looks good.
So I want to see all of that stuff, but I have not gotten a chance to do that yet. So that's going to wrap it up. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.